This is Gamma Mash for KZFR 90.1 FM, and we're doing an entire show today on homelessness, unaccompanied youth in California. We have Megan Malloy from Butte County Office of Education, School Ties, and Shahara Hyatt from California Homeless Youth Project. Welcome to the studio, ladies. So maybe I'll start with you, Shahara. Just kind of like briefly introduce yourself with a thumbnail on your organization and the role you play in it.
Yeah, so I'm the director of the California Homeless Youth Project, and we're based in Sacramento, and we aim to educate policymakers about the needs of homeless youth throughout the state of California. So we do that through our publications. We end up just reading and writing and talking a lot about this issue of youth homelessness, looking at the latest research, also talking to young people with lived experience of homelessness to ask them what their ideas are for change. And we both bring them directly to the Capitol to talk with policymakers and come up with informed solutions, and also try to share those messages through our writings and our social media.
Awesome. What about you, Megan?
I am with the Butte County Office of Education School Ties Program. I've been there for 12 years, and I have an amazing team of people who provide educational support to students experiencing homelessness. So our whole mission is to get students connected to school and successful in school. So I see it as we're implementing these policies, and we're here at the ground level, at the county level, and school district level doing that.
So I want to kind of jump in here. I have like a way to help people connect to this issue. So it was actually, I don't think I've shared this story with you, Megan. So I was down at School Ties back in December of 2014, and I was interviewing you, Megan, and you were so passionate, and it was so intense talking about the homeless youth that I literally almost lost it. I almost lost it, and I had to kind of use some techniques to kind of like look away and then not look at you, and then I started to figure out how I was going to transition to the next thing about foster youth, just so that I didn't like break down and, you know, start crying and like have to stop the interview. It was so, so devastating, and that really started to get me even more so looking at just the different youth and the different young people I see out on the street, and just how chaotic this issue is and how little it's been communicated in public space.
It can seem like a devastating and overwhelming problem, for sure. The scale is much larger than most people realize. I still encounter people in Butte County who say, well, yeah, we have homeless adults, but we don't really have homeless youth. The reality is we do. We have around 1,000 homeless youth in our school districts. These are children attending school, kindergarten through age 21, who are still trying to work on their high school diploma. So it's a huge issue, but there are things we can do to improve the situation.
Shahara?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good point that you made, that this issue of homelessness, this crisis of homelessness, is something that doesn't get the bandwidth it deserves in the Capitol, certainly, and then also doesn't get the reaction it deserves oftentimes from our communities. And I think that part of that issue is folks have become really desensitized to homelessness. And I think that it's kind of like what you're talking about, you know, faced with the reality of this crisis of poverty and of homelessness, a lot of times it is too uncomfortable to look directly at. And I think that it challenges people, and it challenges people to consider their own privilege. And I think a lot of times, instead of humanizing, you know, why are people ending up on the streets, a lot of times folks end up justifying why they're there so that they don't have to take accountability. And I think that one of the things I want to challenge all of us to do is to take accountability, is to say that, you know, these are our neighbors, these are our friends, this is the community that we belong to, and we're all responsible for working together to help end homelessness.
I want to transition here to, you know, kind of like the who, what, where, and why. So maybe a little dialogue around who are homeless youth.
It's important for people to understand. It depends on which definition is being used. I really like that in the education world, we use the broadest definition. There are many different definitions of homelessness, but ours includes young people who are doubled up, couch surfing, sharing housing, bouncing from place to place. I think it's really important to use that broad definition, especially when talking about young people who are often in these situations, and especially in rural areas like here in Butte County, where we do not have a shelter for homeless youth. We do have a program where youth can be sheltered in foster homes through the HEART program, but it's not the same thing as having an emergency shelter. So our youth need to be seen and understood and not hidden anymore as being part of people who are experiencing homelessness or who are without stable housing. And that includes doubled up, couch surfing, bouncing around.
Yeah, and I think Megan makes a great point that we think of it the same way. You know, any young person who's lacking a fixed, regular, and adequate place to sleep, an adequate nighttime residence, we consider homelessness. And so it does kind of vary depending on, you know, which program you might be talking about or which, you know, federal definition. But I think that having the most inclusive understanding of what we're talking about when we're talking about homeless youth is really helpful, because it does kind of challenge some of the, I think, ideas that folks might have when they have a more narrow view of who experiences homelessness. And of course, you know, there are chronically homeless folks who are living outside, and that's a very real part of the population, but it's not the only part of the population. And a lot of times for children and families who are homeless, it's a little bit more of an invisible issue because, like Megan said, you know, they may be living doubled or tripled up with other families because they, you know, have lost their, they've lost their home, or they've been evicted, can't afford to pay rent. You know, it's usually, it's exclusively actually out of economic necessity, not out of like cultural preference or just, you know, a desire to have like a shared living situation. And so we really consider that that type of extreme like housing instability a homeless experience, because folks aren't on the lease, they don't know when they could get kicked out, and that comprises a lot of the students that we see experiencing homelessness.
You know, I would kind of transition to, you know, why youth are homeless and kind of add a little color to a youth I was talking to yesterday with Youth for Justice. And you, in this wonderful youth homelessness in California, a quick overview is what we're kind of walking through, and that's from the California Homeless Youth Project, of which Shahara is the executive director. But the first sentence says, youth overwhelmingly cite family conflict and breakdown. And I literally was talking to this youth, and I've reached out to him several times, but he was having a hard time kind of, you know, knowing that he's actually come from Chico. You know, I asked him, how long have you been in Chico? Only a year. How long? Oh, I graduated from this high school. But the bottom line is, he started to tell me a story. And this kid, literally, there was one point he lived in three states all across the country in a six-month period. And he literally went through like six or seven different places he lived, and how his parents were homeless, and how they lived in shelters. And it was just like chaos. And that is pretty much, every story is different, but that's a common thread, is this dysfunctional, chaotic, you know, young period in their lives.
You know, if I could really quick, I would love to kind of caveat that issue of family conflict and say that a lot of times that's also coming from poverty, right? That knowing that it's not necessarily because there are deficits within this family or with these parents, because I think that generally parents are doing the best they can with what they have. But, you know, in recognizing that our state and our nation has a housing affordability crisis, and when folks are living, like, for example, doubled up, you know, with multiple families, if you get an argument with your parents or with your sibling, there may not be a place for you to go cool down. And so I think sometimes, you know, even though we talk about family conflict as being sort of like a precursor for homelessness, especially among youth, we also, you know, need to look at what is our system doing to provide for families in crisis. And if you ask a young person why they became homeless, no young person is going to say it's because of decades of federal disinvestment in affordable housing, right? And so we're kind of constantly absolving the system of responsibility. We don't look at, you know, our national context for why, you know, why this crisis of homelessness in such a wealthy, developed country.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We do not have enough affordable housing for families, or for individuals for that matter. When there is nowhere in this country that you can even work at a minimum wage job full time and afford a fair market rent, that's a huge problem. If you think about this family conflict issue, it has to be tied to the economic situation as well, because all families have conflict, right? And especially teenagers, you're having, it's that time when you're growing and stretching and you're going to have conflict with your family. When there's no resources and nothing to bring you back together, that's when I think homelessness results from that. I don't really like the runaway label. And I've really gotten away from even talking about that or using that. We used it a lot when I first started doing this work 10 years ago. People go to this idea that, well, you know, these kids, it's their choice. They're just running away. They're making a bad choice and running away that's resulting in this situation. I would overwhelmingly, in 10 years of doing this, I think I have met one or two students who were classified as runaways who actually had a place to go back to, that was a safe and appropriate place for them to be. Unaccompanied youth, I see for so many different reasons and so many complex reasons, but that economic hardship is always at the heart of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a good point. too, that I think a lot of folks feel like, you know, if you're a young person experiencing homelessness, it's because you don't want to follow the rules at home. And if you would just go home and agree to mow the lawn on Saturdays, you could have a house again. And, of course, that's not at all what we see with young people who are actually experiencing homelessness, for whom challenges are much greater. And, yeah, running away is kind of a part of, like, a really oversimplified mythology about young people who are homeless, who are often in crisis and need support.
Yeah, the way I've tried to help people particularly is, even to put it in my own personal history, you know, things must be dire at home if I'm going to walk 30 miles to Boston and sleep on the streets of Boston on a sidewalk in the middle of November. You know, it's not like you woke up one day going, that's a really good choice for my day today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the more people can understand that the situation that people have to place themselves in is really, you know, just saying that they don't have a better choice.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the other, I have two interns that we do this little paid internship program. It's the same thing with him. He literally came from a home that just grew up in poverty, and he kind of explained the whole thing. And I would agree with you, Megan, that I've only, I can only think of one youth that I really talked with I knew that could go back to a really healthy environment. So it's
mm-hmm.
just not there. People are trying to find a much safer place, and sometimes that includes having to leave where they're at. As we look at the, you know, who are the homeless youth, what are some of the basic characteristics? You know, what are some of the basic characteristics of homeless youth in California?
Well, you know, I would say that it's not a homogenous population, right? There's a lot of diversity within the homeless youth community, and you know, in some ways it reflects just the general youth population, but we do see certain communities really overrepresented in terms of experiencing homelessness, and so we know that there are more LGBT youth experiencing homelessness than in the general youth population. There are more youth of color, particularly African American and Native American youth, experiencing homelessness in our country than just in the general youth population. And it's important to look at those things because, again, it's not reflective of any deficits within those communities. It's sort of reflective of systemic discrimination and oppression within our institutions and within our society, and the ways that those play out to marginalize young people in particular, and, you know, can prevent, like, job and housing and education opportunities because of this discrimination, making it harder to exit homelessness.
The only thing I might add, I wouldn't say this is a characteristic of homeless youth, because I agree there's so much diversity amongst homeless youth, but homeless youth do tend to be more at risk for having health problems, both physical
mm-hmm.
health problems and mental health problems. So it's not exactly a characteristic, but it's a consequence of experiencing homelessness that we see. And so I think this is an area where we really need to recognize that a lot more work and policy and funding needs to go into mental health treatment and basic health services, health, dental, preventative health services, reproductive health services.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think it's a good time to transition a little bit, so now that the listeners have a little better understanding from listening here to Megan Malloy, the program coordinator for School Ties here in Butte County Office of Ed, and to Shahara from the California Homeless Youth Project. I'd like to kind of dimension it a little bit. I know I've heard some of the numbers here in Butte County, so maybe we can come back to the Butte County in a second, Megan. But Shahara, what about letting the listeners know what the situation is throughout the state and then in Sacramento County in general?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some different ways where we try to better understand the scope of youth homelessness within our state. And I would say all of them are imperfect. But when we look at the data on students experiencing homelessness in California, so in the 2013-14 school year, almost 300,000 students throughout our state experienced homelessness at some point. And that is more than the entire student population of Alaska, D.C., and Vermont combined. We have more homeless students in our state. So it's a particularly large issue within California. Nationally, about 2% of students experience homelessness at some point in the school year. In our state, about 5%. So we have more than double the rate of student homelessness, and about 25% of the homeless student population. So we're hugely overrepresented. I think that is largely reflective of the housing affordability crisis in our state, and the lack of kind of state-level coordination to really address and invest in solutions to homelessness and really meeting the needs of families and individuals who cannot afford market-rate housing. I think we need to see that as our responsibility. So that's sort of a brief estimate of state-level kind of homelessness. when we look at Sacramento and Butte County, which folks can do on kidsdata.org. There's a really great interactive website where if you type in homelessness, you can learn about, you know, the scope of homelessness within your county and what it looks like. And so one of the interesting things for me is that Butte County kind of has a higher rate of unsheltered homeless students when compared with the state or when compared with Sacramento County. And I think that kind of speaks to what Megan was talking about in that there are not specific services for homeless youth. You see this a lot in the rural counties across the state. There are no shelters or transitional housing for homeless youth in particular in two-thirds of California's 58 counties. So where there's this dearth of services, you see higher rates of unsheltered homelessness. You know, that's what happens when we don't provide for these young people.
Do you have like a county that's doing like so much better than any other county that people might want to see what they're doing?
You know, there is not enough shelter or housing or supportive services for homeless youth in any county across the state. So even for that one-third of counties in California that are resource-rich enough to have some services for homeless youth, none are able to meet the need. And so I would say, you know, some counties are definitely trying to do a better job of coordinating and serving this population. You know, we see homeless youth task forces popping up in different places across the state. But I think that everybody is struggling because there is a real critical lack of state-level funding investment for homeless youth programs in particular, and also a strategy around addressing housing affordability.
What about Butte County, Megan?
I think we have some amazing people doing really great work. We have actually just started up our own local homeless youth collaborative or homeless youth task force. Actually, Shahara, I was inspired by a presentation I saw from you in October at the McKinney-Vento coordinators meeting.
Yeah.
We've had two meetings, right, Bill? And
yeah.
We're kind of figuring out exactly what we're going to do. We have some amazing agencies here, and I know that we can take what limited resources we have and coordinate them, but we need the response of the whole community, not just the usual suspects, not just the handful of organizations, public agencies and nonprofits that are doing this work, and the few community members who always show up, like Bill and others. We need the response from the whole community, and we need it at a policy level, an investment level, from Board of Supervisors, city councils, on down. And there's a role for everyone in the community to get involved.
I entirely agree with that. I want to shift to the effects of criminalization on homelessness. I mean, we really kind of help the listeners understand that this isn't a choice, that this isn't personal flaws. This is poverty. This is lack of housing. This is lack of, you know, stable environments. How much incremental damage does criminalizing people and stigmatizing them do to the overall situation?
Yeah, so when we talk about criminalizing homelessness, you know, kind of what we're talking about is a whole class of laws that restrict really the rights and movement of people experiencing homelessness. And so we see those manifest in anti-camping ordinances, anti-loitering laws, sit-lie laws. And if you talk about these things a little bit differently, you could also call them, you know, anti-sleeping, anti-sitting, anti-standing. And when you think of it that way, which is exactly what it is, it really makes it clear that we are criminalizing behaviors that are necessary for human survival. And so these are things that we all do every day, sit, lie, stand, sleep. But if you don't have a home from which to do them, they become criminal behavior. And there's, you know, a lot now of research and advocates and certainly people with lived experience of homelessness saying that's not right and that's not fair. And actually the Department of Justice has said, you know, it's cruel and unusual to punish people for sleeping outside when they have no other options. And so when we go back to that statistic, like, you know, two-thirds of California's counties have no program specifically for homeless youth, and then we criminalize them for sleeping outside or for loitering outside, you know, really doing that when there is no alternative choice they could be making. And so it's really unfair, I think, to burden the criminal justice system with a social issue. It's a shallow approach that communities are taking when they don't have the funding and resources to address homelessness. Because what happens is that community members call the police when they see people living outside or people digging through the trash or whatever they may need to do for survival. And I think that lack of compassion and understanding for, you know, why is somebody sleeping in the park? It's certainly not to upset you. It's because they don't have another option. And so if that is what we have decided is our response as a community or as a country to let this happen, then we should at the very least give people the human dignity and respect of letting them sleep. And I can't tell you how often, you know, walking around in my community where I know a lot of young people who are experiencing homelessness, you know, I'm having coffee or something and somebody walks up and, you know, we say hello and they're like, oh, just got woken up again. And it's a constant interaction with law enforcement officers who ask them either to move along, to wake up, to go somewhere else. And the fact of the matter is there is no somewhere else. So we're not really giving young people an actual choice. And, you know, what we see is that, you know, the recidivism rate for breaking these laws is incredibly high, because if you get an anti-camping ticket for sleeping outside one night, you're likely going to have to do the same again the next night if there still are no, you know, options for you. And that is, you know, absolutely the reality that we're living in.
What I really wanted to stop on really, really quickly, because I think this will help people conceptualize a little bit how important it is to keep intact families. But, you know, many foster children end up homeless in early adulthood. They identify the experience of being a foster child as being homeless. A lot of the interviews I do, Shahara and Megan, I actually have had youth tell me that it's just like being homeless. I mean, they've been in the foster system. Now they're homeless and they're comparing the two. You know, what could you add to that to, you know, help the listeners better understand, you know, the issues of homelessness and you know, unstable homes?
Yeah, Mia, would you like to start? Or would you like me to?
Yeah, sure, I can. In our School Ties program, we also serve students who are in foster care with educational supports. And there are many similarities. It's a lack of stability in their lives. So we know that many children in foster care, they're leaving their family of origin, being placed in foster care, and then may have many moves after that. That's where I think that similarity is. And then also after going through this large structured institution that is the foster care system, once you emancipate as an adult, then you're on your own and may not have those supports. Most young people are being supported by their parents well into their 20s and beyond. So our students who have been in foster care may not have those kinds of supports. There has been a lot of policy work around this, and now that foster care has been extended through age 21, I've seen huge improvements in the number of former foster youth experiencing homelessness has gone way down. I think it's one of the most successful pieces of policy I've seen in my career, was the AB 12. I think we need to see more of this kind of legislation and then funding behind it to provide housing supports while those students are attending college, getting jobs, training, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and Megan raises a really great point that, you know, extending foster care in California to age 21 is something that's made a huge difference for young people in that system, and especially in terms of preventing homelessness. I think what's a challenge, because, you know, like you've mentioned, there are so many similarities between young people who were in the child welfare system and those who either were missed or by that system or opted out. And so for some of the homeless youth who are not in child welfare system, you know, they're seeing their friends in foster care be able to have a little bit more access to housing or supportive services or educational scholarships or subsidies than what they're able to have. And I think that, you know, kind of creates confusion among some of the homeless youth and young adults that we see. And so what I would love to see is, yeah, the recognition that that's been such a great policy change, and extending the supports for foster youth to homeless youth who may not have been in the system as well, so they can also get the housing and resources they need.
Completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that.
Yes.
Yeah.